David Sampson joins us for the local hour. And David, I guess I have to talk about this with you. I'm about to go on vacation for 4 out of the next 5 weeks. I'd like to continue doing these, but would you be all right with occasionally doing one with Chris Cody and Billy Gill, for example?
If you want me to do that, then of course I'd be happy to do it. They would have to actually talk to me, though. How would that work?
I think they've talked to you. They've done a local hour with you. It's just, I know Billy can challenge you in ways that I can't, because he probably knows more about the recent years. I think I'm holding my own when it comes to the early 2000s, mid-2000s. Not that this whole podcast is about challenging you, because I think we have interesting conversations like we can have with Major League Baseball and what Buster Olney said earlier this week. I thought that was interesting. I'd like to talk to you about that. But there's also stuff in regards to some of the moves in the 2010s that they'd be able to push you on a little bit, and just, you know, make sure the audience doesn't get bored. Give them a little bit of a different look. I think I'm down for that idea.
I'm all for it. Just name the day and the place, and you know, I'll talk to any of your crew. I love your crew.
All right, so you're the host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson. Last week, we didn't get a review from you because your whole world came crashing to a halt because you found out that Sparky was not because you were a bit of a spark plug, but because Jack McKeon simply did not know your name. Did you confirm my theory?
So I wanted to get Jack on the show with us this week.
Oh, wow.
And I think that we can do it for next week. And I need to tell you that you would only believe that because he told you. So if I tell you why I was called Sparky, you by definition don't believe me, because that is sort of your default position. It's like when you reset every morning, you wake up and say, wait a minute, I've got to make sure that I challenge Samson and make sure he realizes that every principle that he believes in is completely wrong. So I could bring on Jack McKeon.
Hey,
you can't rehearse him.
David, that's not how I wake up every morning, just how I wake up on Thursday mornings.
I want to believe I'm in your thoughts 7 days a week.
We've gotten a lot of positive feedback, so I see Samson in my mentions at least once a day, every day. Jack McKeon joining us on Zoom seems like it would be an adventure, David. I don't know how that would work.
We would have to set it up that we would start, and that we'd have to have someone assigned to him for technology purposes. It would require a step-by-step process. There's no doubt about that. Have you been on a Zoom meeting during this quarantine, by the way, where it's supposed to start at a certain time, and it requires an extra 20 minutes just for logistical purposes for people who can't figure out how to use it?
Yeah, I've been on that. It was earlier on, and it was with people of a certain age. I've never been on a Zoom with someone as old as Jack McKeon. And just given what you told us about Jack McKeon last week, I'm not even sure it's an age thing with old Trader Jack. I'm very curious to see if he can even get into a Zoom.
You know, one of my greatest regrets about having sold the team is that we had made a promise to Jack that he was going to be the oldest manager in the history of baseball to ever manage a game. We were going to bring him back to manage. And we had spoken to Mattingly about it, and everything was all done that we were going to bring him back to manage a day. And when I was let go and the team was sold, unfortunately, Jack was then let go, which is obviously, it still bothers me in terms of Andre Dawson and Tony Perez and Jeff Conine and Jack McKeon, who really had nothing to do with Laurie as Sampson. They were just icons of the organization. And the way Derek handled that, he was new, so I give him a pass. He just didn't have any advisors at all. And the ones who were telling him not to do it, he didn't want to listen to because he thought that they had an agenda. But the reality is that losing Jack still hurts Jack, because his heart and his love is in South Florida, and he won't come back now. He will not come back. And he's now with the Nationals, and it's just disappointing because he's kept himself in shape. He still is in shape, and it would not have been a gimmick. It's something that meant something to him. And if he's able to do it, which he was, it would have worked. And Jeter just wouldn't do it. And that's of all the stuff that Jeter's done, that is the one thing, believe it or not, that truly bothers me. The other stuff is just fun to talk about, the home run sculpture and all the other craziness. But this one was just such a lack of understanding of our franchise.
Let's stay here a little bit. This is the famous firing of the luminaries discussion that we've had on the show. Tony Perez, Andre Dawson, Jeff Conine. I think you were in charge of informing these Marlins luminaries mm-hmm. that they were being let go, and that was shitty.
You know, it's not that it was that. It was that I understood that that's what Derek asked me to do, and that's when I was still the president of the team. And I explained to them that changes were coming, and I tried to explain to Derek what they meant to the organization. And I understood, though, that Derek wanted to bring in his own assistants, like the George Posadas and the people who he's brought in who are his guys. But I explained to him, it's like when we got to Florida, when John Henry sold the team, Andre and Tony were already working for the team. And it wasn't even a thought that we would get. Now, I understand when we went through the budget and we said, are there any places we could cut? Are there any things we want to do? You wouldn't even look to Andre Dawson, Tony Perez. These are Hall of Fame players. At the time, Andre was not in the Hall of Fame. Tony was. But these are icons, and you find room for them because you want their presence with your players. You want their presence in the community. And for whatever reason, Derek just wasn't interested in that. And what he did was, once I let them go, there was such a backlash. He actually then tried to reverse course and bring them all back. And he just would not engage with them. He wouldn't talk to them. And he offered them a quarter of their already small salaries and told them they weren't allowed in the clubhouse. They weren't allowed to be in uniform during spring training, during pregames, all the things that they had been used to. And frankly, that was their strength, was to have them to mentor young players. And it just showed to me that Derek was going to have a problem. And that's continued to this day, actually, if you think about the way his team has gone. Because he has tried to be the Yankees in terms of, well, the Yankees didn't have anyone. His answer always was, well, Reggie Jackson doesn't get to be in uniform, something like that. And I just found that to be silly. Just because the Yankees did something a certain way, that doesn't mean that's the way to do it. And frankly, just because I did it a certain way doesn't mean that's the way it's supposed to be done. But at least come in and give it some thought. Let it go a year before you let them go. And it's been hurtful to the team. There's no doubt about it.
Hearing you talk about Derek, it always interests me because you guys made the decision to sell, right? You could have not sold the team to Derek Jeter. You knew once you sold the team, you would be ceding control to someone else, and things like this would happen. Yet in the manner that he went about it, it seems to have stung. Not seems to have, it definitely stung. But how different would this have been if it were somebody else?
It wouldn't have been. So that's the thing. People think it's about Derek. So to me, it's not about Derek at all. I have no feelings about him one way or the other. It's about when someone, it's what I talk about when you own a team or the president of a team, you're holding the baton for the time that you have the team, and then you pass the baton to somebody else. That's how it goes in professional sports. And what happened with Derek is he came in and he was so angry immediately about the price that he was forced to pay. That his partners were forced to pay.
That's funny.
That he just became so angry about everything that, as you know, this is not me making it up. This is not me being sensitive. He went public with the fact that the previous ownership and the previous president were horseshit, and we have to do everything opposite. They have a terrible minor league system. They've never won at the big league level. They have no fans. We're going to come in and change it all. And I ask you, after 3 years now, if you're going to evaluate me, which you have personally as president, you have to start now. There's no more, he's trying to clean up your mess, right? Mm-hmm. I appreciate that would be okay for a year to say he's got to clean up the mess. But now he's obsessed still with anything related to me. I mean, I hear stories. What he doesn't realize is that I still have many friends and contacts in the community. I'm aware always of what he's doing and saying only because people come back to me with it and they tell me. So he listens and has people listen to every one of our local hours, he reads every tweet, every one of my Nothing Personal episodes. And it's like they're obsessed with it in a way that is strange. And it's not sexual, I don't think. It's just some sort of weird obsession with anything I do. I
think you're giving yourself a little too much credit there, David.
Well, that's why I said it's not sexual. Trust me. It, Believe me, I have no bag that was ever waiting for me once I got fired. I had no goodie bag. I had no anything. Trust me. So it's not that. It's that I think that he wants to so badly separate himself, and he thought that he would do so much better. But 3 years later, you know, it's still Marlins Park. There's still no new TV deal. There's still no increase in season tickets. There's still not more winning. The one thing that's changed is a better minor league system. And people make a mistake here, Mike. I want the Marlins to win.
Yeah.
I think that it's we're a better city when we have winning franchises. So people who think mistakenly that I root against them is totally wrong. I want these prospects to work, and I want a better TV deal so they have the ability to stay financially afloat. I want those things.
Yeah, you want baseball to work. I don't know why. I don't think that this is... Is this a straw man? Because who would think that you would want... I think you would... Okay, listening to this, I could get the impression why some people would say David Sampson definitely wants Derek Jeter to fail. I can get people saying that. But if the Marlins succeed, it actually boosts your legacy within the community and within baseball, because now you have a packed stadium, a stadium that doesn't exist, were not for David Sampson's negotiations, and you actually get to live out your dreams as being an old man and taking grandkids to the ballpark and saying, you know, I did this.
So yeah, the answer is yes. I don't think about it in that way, but now that you're mentioning that, I can't wait to take a grandchild to Marlins Park. I mean, I haven't been back since I was shown the door. And I'm not sure I'm invited back, though. I could buy a ticket, but I just thought that would be a strange distraction if I went to a game. Although if I did, I guess I would sit in the Diamond Club. I think they renamed it and rebuilt it. But I think it'd be funny. Or maybe I would just by accident go up to my old suite and say hello and see how that would go. But I assume security would do something to stop that from happening.
You could refuse to cut your beard, and I think you could walk in there. Although... I mean, men of a certain stature, you'd be noticeable. I think they'd pick you out from that crowd, especially when there are 12 people there.
Listen, the whole social distancing Marlins Park, by the way, just so you know, that does not make me feel good. So when people think that I'm rooting against the Marlins, it's just not the case, because when I see jokes about how the Marlins have been social distancing since the franchise started, how none of these new rules for fans will impact the Marlins in any way, I don't take any pride in that, right? Maybe the pride would be if we sold out every game and won every year, and then he came in and didn't sell any tickets and didn't win, maybe there'd be a little schadenfreude. But frankly, he's getting the exact same results I did, exactly, in every way.
I wonder if he's going to get the benefit of the doubt, much like other teams might, because this is such a kooky Major League Baseball season now. 60 games in baseball. Why even play? I don't understand. I understand why they're playing.
Okay, I mean, good. That's stupid. Just going to say.
Yeah, but I mean, 60 games season is not a representative sample in that sport. And they plan on expanding the playoffs. So you're going to have a champion that's going to be random as all get out. What do you make of this plan as we know more and more about it? And very interesting take from Busser Olney, which he gives it a 0% chance of the season finishing and even like a 5% chance of the season even starting.
So I don't like when he said 0% chance of finishing. And the reason I don't is what we've learned during this pandemic is speaking in superlatives, you're always wrong. So Rob saying there's 100% chance of baseball, and then 5 days later, the season's in jeopardy. I don't believe in 100% and 0%. I think the truth is always somewhere in the middle. And the issue is what happens, like with Dallas FC that just happened, where now it's 9 players have tested positive.
Must correct you. It's FC Dallas.
FC Dallas. Thank you. I'm sorry. Are some teams the name and then FC? And yeah. Some teams are FC and then the name?
Yeah. It's just, you know, it sounds different. I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure why their football club Dallas as opposed to Dallas Football Club. Hang on, let me zoom in my soccer expert real quick. Chris, why are they FC Dallas as opposed to Dallas FC?
More of a Spanish naming convention. You see, like clubs in Spain, it's Football Club Barcelona as opposed to the other way around.
And while I have you, Inter Miami's name doesn't make any sense at all, right? Because they're Inter Miami CF. But in the badge, it's like the exact opposite of that.
Yeah, if you went off of the way that it's spelled, it would be C Inter Miami F, Yeah, because it's Club Internacional de... I'm sorry, C Inter F Miami is actually what it would be.
F Miami. David Sampson knows something about that slogan. That's something that you could get behind. Yeah, I mean, it's a kooky league, David. They have a team that's called Real Salt Lake. I mean...
So in any case...
Yeah, I think we're all learning right, lessons. Since they arrived in the bubble, David, this is hugely concerning.
It should be hugely concerning. So this is what the sports are looking at. All of these tests that happen before spring training or before the training part of the NBA, let's say, it's not like the leagues are rooting for the players to be positive, but if there's ever a time to be positive, this is the time, because you don't want to say that your bubble in Orlando has been pierced. So if people come and they're testing positive, that's okay. But what happens if before game one of the first round, six Lakers test positive? When will the competitive integrity of these games be impacted? And when it's impacted, what do you do about it? So many years ago, there was a playoff series between the Heat and the Knicks, and there was a fight that took place when Jeff Van Gundy hung on Alonzo Mourning's leg. And there were a bunch of suspensions for game six and game seven of that series. But the series went on. It didn't have the best players playing. It was not true Heat-Knicks because of the suspensions for fighting and leaving the bench. So will basketball do the same thing and say, listen, if four of your guys test positive, it's as though they had been suspended for a game or two or three or four games, but then you got to play with the rest of your roster, and that's just going to be the end of it. But what happens if there's multiple teams where that is a situation? I think that's what the leagues are thinking about right now.
Yeah, I don't know what we're going to learn from MLS. Granted, they just got to the bubble. The assumption is out there that this is something that they got in Dallas, and then it started triggering because many asymptomatic cases might just be pre-symptomatic, and they get to Orlando, and it finally hits their system. Nine players, including your nine positive tests, including your manager. In soccer, that's a big deal. It's borderline, why are we even doing this in specific regards to FC Dallas? Maybe they should pull out of the tournament, especially since they're the only positive test inside the bubble presently. But you can survive it with a rotational squad, depending on how long some of those players are. Maybe they miss a game, get back out there and help. In the NBA, one player makes all the difference in the world, depending on the player. And 2 weeks is essentially a series in that sport, in the postseason. If they have the sort of start to their bubble that FC Dallas just had, any team has that, or if they have double-digit positive tests, I'd be really curious to see what Adam Silver does, because he's not... I know he's desperate for the money, as all these sports leagues are, but he is considered the wokest, the commissioner in sports. So I wonder how he handles it.
But remember, none of the leagues have said 14 days. What they've said is once you're positive, you have to have two negative tests after 24 hours of being positive. So that could be, we don't know. That could be 4 days. That could be 5 days. There's no set time. Baseball did the same thing. When you're on the COVID list, which, by the way, is one of the most interesting parts of baseball's return, because the union and owners have been arguing and talking about how are we going to release names. Now they've decided no names will be released. There will just be they won't be able to play. So imagine if you are the Yankees, and all of a sudden you have Giancarlo Stanton. And the concern is he always gets injured, right? So you say Giancarlo Stanton has been put on the COVID list. But that doesn't mean he has COVID. It could mean that he has a hamstring issue, but they want to only put him on for fewer than 10 days. Or he has a little bicep. And I'm just using Giancarlo's name. There is a chance for some nefarious behavior in baseball as it relates to these lists. Because there's a 10-day injury list. There's a 45-day injury list. And the COVID injured list, it does not mean you tested positive for COVID. And there's no maximum or minimum number of days on that list. And because of HIPAA, you have a chance for players to be put on that list just because they have a sore throat. And then you can rotate in someone to play because you're playing 60 games in 63 days. So how GMs and owners in the league are going to deal with all this is fascinating to me.
Yeah, Fauci said that he had the ultimate, well, not the ultimate faith, but he felt really good about the NBA's bubble plan and thought it was as good as someone could approach this. I think that it's a very ripe scenario for an outbreak, really. But I think we'll learn some lessons with what's going on in MLS right now. Per the Orlando Sentinel, under MLS protocol, the entire Dallas travel party has been isolated at the team hotel and will be tested daily for 14 days. No contact allowed with other teams and staff. By the way, real quick message to our podcast audience. I listened to yesterday's podcast with Amino Hassan. We just changed podcast hosting sites, and so you're hearing a little bit more mid-roll, a few more ads. We didn't really know that it would happen that way, so in the middle of a sentence, essentially, Amino Hassan would be hit with an ad. I understand. It didn't sound good, but here's what the listening audience needs to understand is I'm about to go on PTO for 4 out of the next 5 weeks. I promise you, I will get this fixed, just not today. So there. David.
What if that were interrupted, by the way? What if that's interrupted by an ad on
today's
show?
That'd be so great. I would hope so. In fact, it's probably going to be because there were a lot of ads. But I want to talk to you about specifically what you said about Derek Jeter, because you said he was angry with you. How does Derek Jeter show his anger? Did you see a side of Derek Jeter that many of us would be shocked to see?
Oh, for sure, because he was very careful with his all through his playing career. He was Teflon, right? I mean, he never had a scratch on him.
Class personified.
Exactly. And no, it was much different. You know, during the course of negotiating, I've really never told stories about this, actually. I mean, it was, we would have drinks together. We would have meetings because he was trying to make sure that he was the chosen group. And I would hear from him constantly and from text messages and phone calls and questions he would have moments where he would be very upset when he thought that I was changing the rules of the bidding when I told him that, no, it's going to take another $100 million, for example. Things like that would set him off in a way that I understand. I never held it against him, just like I never held Jorge Mas not hitting the number or Wayne Rothbaum or any of the other people who were bidding. I was never upset with anybody for what they bid. I'm not forcing bids on people. When you're selling an asset, you're out there trying to get the most you can, and you're not upset when people enter or exit. You basically tell them what you're going to accept and what you're not going to. I think that the thing with players and why having players segue to ownership is so hard, you never say no to players. I'm not sure that Jeter was ever told no by anyone. And I would say no to him often on things that he would ask. And that created tension, I would say. But as I've told you, there was never greater tension than when he had to be told that he wouldn't be the control person because that's what he wanted. And that caused permanent damage in our relationship, I would say.
But that was Manfred that told you to dictate that. I mean, it was fairly obvious. Someone had to relay the message. You thought that you would be presenting a united front, and then Rob Manfred quickly realized the situation. Quite frankly, it was probably the smarter play, considering Derek was going to be around for a while and you guys were on your way out of baseball, and Rob Manfred decides to be good cop as your bad cop.
Which was fine, because I've been living like that with Jeffrey forever, right? So I've always been the bad cop. And that's just a part I would play. It doesn't mean that's the way I am, which I think is part of the confusion. But I just knew I didn't have 23 votes for Derek. You need 23 votes to become a control person, and he didn't have the 23 votes. I'm looking at the Mets transaction the same way, right? I don't know how A-Rod and J-Lo, first of all, people are reporting, it's so funny to me, that they are going to be the control people of the Mets. People don't understand. There are not two control people of a team. One person, no matter what, it can be a man, it can be a woman, it can be both, it can be, but it's one individual heartbeat is the control person of each franchise. So it's not like A-Rod and J-Lo can walk into an owner's meeting and say, okay, vote for us. We are the control person, right? The way they do their TikToks. It's just funny to me. And so there's just a lot of misinformation. And I'm not sure that A-Rod could get the 23 votes to be the control person for the Mets. And he'd have to work very hard to try to get those votes. And I don't think he can.
Really? Obviously, A-Rod's done a boatload of work in repairing his public reputation to the point that now you're saying you don't think he can get the votes when, I mean, it's amazing that you even have to think about it considering where his reputation was within baseball a couple of years ago. If he has the money, and considering the circumstances that we're in globally, pandemic, if Major League Baseball can get a team like the Mets for fair market value, I don't think they'd mind selling to Alex Rodriguez if there are no other takers.
Well, first of all, there are several bidders, and the question is, will they get to the number that the Wilpons want in order for that team to be sold? But the reality is that to be a control person is different than being the face of the franchise. Derek Jeter is not the control person of the Miami Marlins. He's the face of the Miami Marlins. So A-Rod could be the face of the Mets, but he'd have to have a Bruce Sherman behind him. And the rules in baseball are that you have to have someone put in, let's just say, at least 15% of the equity of the team. So if a team is sold for $2 billion, but there's $500 million of debt, let's say, so that's $1.5 billion of equity, someone has to put in 15% of that, which is personally they'd have to put in $225 million. Is that possible? Yeah, it's possible, but I don't think it's possible from A-Rod, but maybe it is.
Let's talk about your owner, Jeffrey Loria, and in the interest of being fair and balanced, we've been dragging Derek Jeter a little bit in this episode. So I wanted to ask you about one high-profile example. It came to my mind while we were discussing the luminaries being dismissed unceremoniously. Tommy Hutton was very popular with Marlins fans, and the reports were he was let go because he was too critical on a Marlins broadcast. What can you tell us about what happened with Tommy Hutton?
Yeah, so I like Tommy, and he was critical, but it has never been reported, but that's not what happened at all. Yeah, it was money. It
really?
Was money. Yeah. Okay. And by the way, Tommy Hutton was not paid by the Marlins.
He was paid by Fox Sports.
The radio broadcasters are paid by the Marlins. Dave Van Horn, Glenn Geffner. Those two were paid by the Marlins. The TV anchors, they're not anchors. They're the play-by-play and the analysts, they're paid by Fox.
But if Jeffrey wanted Tommy Hutton to be the color analyst, Fox would have listened, right?
It's Fox decides on the money. Jeff, what we have in our deal and what most teams have is you have a right not to be unreasonably withheld to approve who the play-by-play and the analyst is. That's a legal term meaning that they say, here's who we're looking at. Here's who we're interviewing to be the new guy, like Todd Hollinsworth. How are you with Todd Hollinsworth? You look at the tape. We know Todd from 2003. That sounds great. But we are not consulted in any way with what their pay would be per game, per season, the number of games off, the number. None of that. We do not. We're not in charge of. So listen, I talk about Jeffrey plenty and the mistakes that he made and the involvement he had, some of which worked, some of which didn't work, the ideas that he had, the number of people who were in his ear. I've tried to explain that all owners have people outside of their organizations who are in their ear and who have influence, and Jeffrey had people like that too, and it was hard for me to deal with being inside the organization. But I will say this, and I will stick to it. Jeffrey was a meddling owner. But there are 30 meddling owners. So there's not one team president who I met over 18 years who did not tell me stories of unbelievably insane things that their owner had done in a phone call to them as president. We have to do this. You have to sign this person. You have to make sure we have this promotion. I want this done. So I think that was another misunderstanding, I think. And it doesn't take away from the difficulty and the incorrect decisions that Jeffrey made, because he did, because all owners do.
I want to save the Trader Jack questions for our next episode, if we can get him on the Zoom. I know that Zoom now has an option where you can call into a Zoom, so maybe that's how we play it. So it'd be better to ask our Jack McKeon questions to the man himself. So we'll pause the Jack McKeon stories. One of the things that we'll unpause is your reviews for the week, David Sampson. TV show or movie? That's the rule. What do you have for us this week?
So I want to review a series I just watched called Home Game on Netflix. And Home Game is where they have 8 30-minute episodes about different sports that are played throughout the world that no one's ever heard of. And I was fascinated by it. So one of the stories is about a sport where you race in rice paddies, buffaloes, on a literally like you are a jockey, you are racing water buffaloes through rice paddies. It is fascinating. Another sport, free diving with people who are fishermen by nature in their island, in their little community, and how these people who have no money, who this is what they do. They hold their breath for 3 minutes because that's how they get food. So then there's this competition where there's free diving. One of them is this incredibly violent sort of game of rugby that is so insane. How about this one? There's an episode where you ride horses like it's polo, except the horses are basically, the people are fighting. You know, chicken when you get on somebody's shoulder? Yeah. So you've got players fighting on horses, and the object is to carry a dead goat and put it into the basket. So there's one dead goat on the field that you scoop up, and then you throw the dead goat in your goal, except all the horses and people are trying to stop you from getting the dead goat into the goal. I want to say, and this is off the top of my head, Hoke Raku, and we're talking in places around the world where
I thought you were going to say this is happening in Alabama.
No, none of these are in the United States at all. These are all in faraway nations. And somehow they put a series together that I didn't think would be interesting. But I'm always looking for new sporting events and thinking about what people do. And these are sports with hundreds of years of history, sometimes thousands of years of history. And to us, we're soccer, we're football, we're basketball, we're baseball. These people, the majority of these people, right, in the world, they couldn't care less about soccer, even though soccer is the global sport, not everywhere. And so it's an interesting show. It's on Netflix. It's called Home Game. And it's very easy to digest in 8 25-minute episodes. And I'd encourage you, because it, as sports people, it gives you an eye inside how other people view sports.
I will absolutely check that out based on your recommendation. We were reaching a bit of a dry period here in original content and new bingeable things. So I'm excited to try a new show. I will report back to you. I will do a cultural exchange with you right now. There is an amazing show that just made its way to Netflix. Nobody watched it because it was a DirecTV exclusive. The show is called Kingdom. The framework of the show is it's an MMA family, but it's really more of a family drama than it is this MMA spectacle, though the fight scenes are actually quite well done. It's 40 episodes. The entire series just made its way onto Netflix. The acting in it is incredible. I think Jonathan Tucker is one of the actors in this show, and he should absolutely be a star based off of his performance in this series alone. So please check out Kingdom, not to be confused with another show called Kingdom that apparently is on Netflix about zombies. It's not that. It's an MMA fighting show.
How long are each episode? Is each episode?
It's like an hour-long drama. It's your standard hour-long drama. This is an entire series that really no one knew existed, has made its way out on Netflix. So I'm really hoping that this series gets some traction, some good word of mouth, because I think the final season kind of felt rushed a little bit. There were more stories to tell. And I don't know, budget-wise, DirecTV wasn't really doing much in the original content game. It just felt like it was abbreviated. So maybe, and I still think that there's more meat on the bone in regards to the stories that they can tell. So if it has a nice little comeback, maybe we can see that show return.
And I want to throw out something that's happening at the end of this week on Disney Plus. Hamilton is being released.
I'm so excited for that.
So listen, here's the math on this. For people upset or concerned that they have to get Disney Plus, it is $10 a month. My view is you get a year of Disney for free by buying a ticket to go see Hamilton, which everybody should see. So for $120, you get to have a front row seat to by far the best show I've ever seen and the most interesting show. And you have to watch it more than once because the lyrics, you're going to miss 40% of the brilliance of the lyrics if you only see the show once. And brilliant that Disney's doing this, because during the quarantine, Broadway is closed for the rest of the year. Most people correctly so, do not, the barrier to entry on Broadway is so significant because of ticket prices. But now we get to see, this is not a movie. This is the actual Hamilton Broadway show that was filmed with 10 HD cameras placed in different parts of the theater. It is supposedly edited perfectly so you can see the characters and see the show. It's not like one camera, so you only are seeing one angle throughout the show. If you don't have Disney Plus, get it. And if you're worried that it's too much money, think about it. If you had a chance to buy a ticket, one ticket, and let your whole family see Hamilton and what you can learn from this musical, it is, I cannot wait for it to come out, and it will be watched more than once, even though I've seen it.
Get that bundle, because you get Hulu and ESPN Plus included. I think the final price is like $12.99, and Hulu, I had no idea Hulu was such a great service, and this is me being company man, but now that all these other sports are coming back, ESPN Plus, not terrible. Not terrible in the least.
So I am so funny and so old that I didn't realize what a bundle was, so I bought them all separately.
Oh.
And I was trying to figure out how to go back and bundle after the fact, which has turned out correctly. So they made it complicated so no one would do it. So I'm an individual subscriber to ESPN Plus, Hulu, and to Disney Plus. And then someone pointed out to me, how come you didn't get the bundle? And it's like the in the fine print on the bottom, trying to figure out how to do something that would actually save. So I was thinking of canceling all three and then repurchasing the bundle. But I found that to be even too difficult.
Really?
But Hulu, I've been shocked with how great that is. Those two shows we talked about, Dave and Mrs. America, have made Hulu. I'd pay Hulu for the whole year, just the fact that I got those two shows.
He's David Samson, and like I said, I'm going to be off for 4 out of the next 5 weeks on, it's not really vacation, I just never took time off when my daughter was born, so I'm going to finally get around to doing that. So, but we're going to continue some of our local hours here with David Samson, and maybe Chris and Billy will mix in there. Again, apologies for the local hour and the ads that just pop out of nowhere. We'll get better at it. It's just some work, and I don't have the time to do that on my last day. It's getaway day here for the Dan Le Batard Show. So, David, I will talk to you next week, hopefully with Jack McKeon, okay? Bookmarking.
I'm going to make that happen.
All right. David Samson, host of Nothing Personal. Make sure to check out his show. The podcast is tremendous. Follow him at David P. Samson on Twitter. Great follow. Samson, be well. Enjoy the 4th. Talk to you next week.
Thank you.